Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Here we are, Yeshaya chapter 21. This chapter is going to deal with the downfall of Babel, Babylonia, which Babylonia was the country that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. The first temple was destroyed by the Babylonians. And they were very cruel, and they were given power for a certain amount of time, and then they had their downfall almost overnight. It often happens in history that for whatever reason, every country is given their chance to see what they can accomplish and what they can do. And some of them are worthy of it, and others abuse their power. And Babylonia was not a very good country, and they fell and they disappeared from the pages of history. The story with Babylonia was that it's famous because they had a banquet, and there was mysterious handwriting on the wall. And in the middle of the banquet, all of a sudden, I mean, just think about it, you had this nice wall, and all of a sudden there's handwriting on the wall, and it was written in a language that nobody could understand. And they decided, they had one Jewish person in the country who worked for the government. His name was Daniel. And he was able to interpret it for them. The message was that the country would be conquered and destroyed that very night. And we use the expression, the handwriting on the wall, like sometimes a country doesn't realize that the decree has already been sent. In other words, the handwriting is there, so to speak, that they had abused their power and it was not going to last. And that very night was the end of the country of Babel. Now, they were taken over by the Medes and the Persians. And that was eventually what led to Ahasuerus and the different governments that were in charge at that time. The Medes and the Persians today there are a bunch of different nations. The same nations are there. You have the Kurds, and you have the Sunnis, and the Shias, and the Bedouins, and they have these various nations in the Middle East. And every now and then, one of them's the main country and is in charge, and it lasts for a little while, and then they lose power in another country, the Alawites, and then the Sunnis, and then they take turns. Their power, life is like a circle, like things, what goes around, it comes around, and people are given chances, and you wonder why certain countries are in minorities and they don't deserve to have the power, the rule. And when they were self-governing, they didn't, when they ruled over other peoples, they didn't, they weren't worthy of it. So let's see, he has a vision here of what's going to happen to Babel. Masa, it's a, the word Masa means like a burden, Midbar Yam. And it's the country that's out there through the desert. Kesufas Benegev, the area that he's describing is that's going to come like a desert storm. Right? That was anybody know where they took the name Desert Storm from? I wonder if it's from this verse here or this calls it Midbar Yam. Kesufas Benegev is really like a desert storm. Here, this one calls it a tempest in an arid land, trying to be poetic. But Lachlof Midbar Ba Me'eretz Nora. And it's going to come out of the desert. Basically, the countries that were going to destroy Babel, the Persians and the Medes, would have to travel through the desert. And usually, it wasn't easy to travel through the desert. You had to, you know, be able to come. It was a difficult territory to navigate. Verse 2. Chazus Kasha Hugali, a very difficult, a harsh prophecy. And you have to keep in mind that even though when wicked people are destroyed, they get what's coming to them. A prophet almost relives the prophecy, like to see, you know, to see a destruction and to hear about a terrible destruction. It's difficult just to hear You know, so granted, it's the Germans, it's the Syrians, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy, you know, to a worser guy, you know, it happens to people that deserve it. But still, just the harshness of the decree and the downfall, it's hard to hear that. It's a harsh prophecy. It's a shame it had to come to that. So you might ask, why do we have to hear a harsh prophecy about Babel? So this verse here kind of summarizes the whole thing over here. Habogeid, bogeid, v'hashodeid, shodeid. In English, he says, the traitor shall be betrayed and the plunder shall be plundered. What goes around comes around. Babel was a traitor. They didn't keep their promises to other countries. They bogeid. The word begida means they rebelled. They rebelled against things that they had committed to, and now all of a sudden the countries that had been their allies would be bogeyed against them. And they had plundered other countries, they had taken the wealth away from other countries, they had destroyed other countries, and now it was going to come around to them. So habogeyed bogeyed vashodeyed shodeyed, the one who used to rebel against others, he's going to have people rebel against him. The Hashodate, in the country that used to carry away the wealth of other countries, they would have people shodate against them. That's the bogeid, bogeid, shodate, shodate. Again, in the Hebrew, it has that connotation. Who is going to be the ones? Ale Elam. Elam is one of those countries in the Middle East. Sur, Madai, and Mud, the Medes were the other one. Kol anechasi hishbati. Now, when usually somebody's destroyed, people feel bad. But over here, the one that would be destroyed was the one that caused all the moaning. Because they caused so much trouble to the world would be happy to see them gone. Nebuchadnezzar was a horrible, wicked monarch that the whole world trembled from him. We mentioned last week or that he used to randomly pick different kings to sodomize, you know, just at his own will, to amongst other things that he did. He was he went mad in his old age and was like an animal, lived like an animal for several years. And these rulers were, some of them were like animals. They killed people, and they had crazy, just it's just hard to picture the ruthlessness of some of them. And so when Babel would be finally taken down, everybody would be able to relax because it was like a wild monster was conquered. Now he's describing the vision. And so again, seeing the vision of the destruction, it's always terrifying. So he says it like this. Okay, therefore, Mila Masna Chalkala. He says, my loins are filled with trembling. Seeing what was going to come on Babel would be like a fearfulness, a trembling. When a person is scared, they get a stomach ache. Like they cause themselves like an ulcer from worry. Their stomach just goes. So he's describing that. He says, Molina Chalkala, my stomach is gone. Siri Machazani. And he has like pangs. Katsiri Leda, like a person giving birth. Those are very painful birth pangs. And so when feeling the destruction and the, Babylonia was built up and the people were very pampered, and the destruction that would come upon them would be fearsome. Nevesi, there was a confusion, like nobody could imagine. Mishmoya Nevhalti Meros, and it's frightening to see. Verse 4, Tala Levavi, their hearts would be confused. Palazzos, that's a funny word, palazzos. Their words would be like plotting, would be like in confusing. Their hearts would be full of confusion. They wouldn't know what to do. Usually these governments that had been such strong conquerors of other nations, you'd think they would call up the defense minister and get organized and figure out what to do. They were going to be totally in the dark over here. And Esneshev Chishki, Sumli Lacharado. They had, the interesting thing was, they made a party, Babylonia, to, they made a lot of drunken parties. When you get to the porn story, you see in the Middle East, it sounds like that's all they did was have parties. The, I mean, today we have like the Senate, you know, where they have long sessions. They had these big, large parties and drinking feasts, and the king would come up with their edicts, and the courts, the royal courts were like banquets. In ancient times, that's typically, I mean, we see how the queen does it. When they go to the queen, they always have very good, you know, service. And even in the White House, you know, they have chefs and they have a certain, that's from ancient times. That's the way the royals, they did business. You went, there was a lot of pageantry and a lot of the honor guard and everybody was standing at attention. They had these royal banquet, this large banquet. Now, they were, some people say that they were superstitious, that they had destroyed the temple, that they'd be punished for that. And in this circumstance, they were right. They were going to be punished for that. But they a certain amount of time had gone by, and the temple had not been rebuilt. And they knew there were prophecies that Hashem would rebuild the temple. So therefore, this party was to celebrate that the temple had not been rebuilt. And what happened was, the first army to overrun Eretz Yisrael had overrun Yerushalayim and had taken the main citizens and sent them into exile. And that had been 70 years from the beginning of that exile. And they all knew, the Jewish prophets had said, 70 years and your time is up. So 70 years had gone by and there had been no rebuilding. So the truth is, there was they all got the counting mixed up. Because for us, as long as the temple stood, the fact that the monarchy was destroyed and a new monarch came in and that people were carted away, to us, as long as the temple was standing, we were still in the land of Israel. And the 70 years was really from the destruction of the temple. But they didn't know that. So he thought that he was secure, and so he made this big party, and they had vessels that they had conquered from the temple that he brought out at the party. We're going to see Ahasuerus does almost the same thing several years later, because they were all worried that they all knew the Jews. They we're used to being a minority, and so we see ourselves in that vein. When the Eretz Yisrael stood, the Jewish people were famous. They were well known. They were strong, and they were mighty, and they were powerful, and they were full of wisdom. And the nations around looked up to them and were afraid of them. And so they were afraid that we would get our independence and would destroy Babel. So they made this party to celebrate the fact that they felt secure. And that's when the handwriting appeared on the wall. And so it describes this banquet didn't quite turn out the way they expected. What had happened, a very interesting thing, was that because they after the handwriting on the wall came, it was a mysterious kind of handwriting, because they didn't. It's not like they had somebody with spray paint who could write. Nobody knew who wrote it and how they wrote it, and big letters, and it had to be deciphered. And it put a panic into the people. So the king went to. He had a plan to do when they were for security concerns, which is he ordered his guards that if you see somebody outside who you don't recognize, just kill them on sight. That was his, and so, but because of his worry, he had a stomachache. And so he went out to use the facilities, and when he came back, he didn't tell his people that he went out to the facilities, and so they killed him on sight. And so that's how he was killed. And this was all at that banquet. And out of the desert came the army of the Medes and the Persians, and they sacked the government. Because nobody really could have believed the speed that it happened, but these kind of totalitarian governments, that they rely on the dictator, when the dictator goes, everything falls. Because they don't know what to do. Because they were so used to just doing the will of that power. When that big power disappears, there's just no way to keep it under control. We've seen that with like Saddam Hussein and with other countries. When that dictator falls, there's no Orach HaShulchan, they set the table. Sofa HaSafis, and they had the lamps going, and Achol Shasu, they ate, they drank. And then they got nervous when they saw the handwriting on the wall. Kumu Hasorim. So the officers got up and they went into defense mode. Mashku Magen. Now, if you want your shield to work, you have to anoint it. In other words, before they'd go out to bed, the idea of a shield is when people throw those spears that they bounce off. Because you don't want to, if it would stick in the shield, then you'd have to get a new shield every time you got a spear stuck into your shield. So they would anoint their shields with a certain kind of oil that would make them slippery. So it would be like, you know, these spears would come in and they'd bounce off. And so in order to get into mode for defense, they'd say, all right, everybody, anoint your shield, you know, get ready. It says in I think it was the eulogy for Shaul, like his shield wasn't anointed, like he didn't even have a chance to prepare his defense, you know. So that's the description. Mashku Magen, you know, anoint your shield. I assume it was their oil. I don't know what else they... Rashi says it was some kind of oil that they used, a grease it or something, trying to think of if something's coming very fast and it hits oil. I guess the oil would deflect it. It would be verse 6. Ki ko amar Hashem. This is what the Lord said. I'm sorry. Ki ko amar Eli Hashem. This is what Hashem said to me. Lech amud hametzapa. Go and look out. Be on the lookout, because they used to have watchmen who would go and be on the lookout to see what would happen. Asher yira yagin, and what you will see, tell everyone, look out and see what you see. Verse 7. The ro rechav semed prashim. And they would see a chariot with a rider. Now the chariot with the rider was the, there was an army behind him. The chariot was the lookout man of the army that was coming. And so they saw this chariot with riders. One's riding a camel and one's riding a horse. I don't know the significance of that.
It says they were a sign of Persia and Media.
Oh, I see. They had different... I wonder if one was like a camel and one was like a donkey. You know, one was like very stubborn. Or maybe they just had different... they drove different cars. One drove the camel version, one drove the donkey version. But that's what it represented. The Hikshiv... Keshev Rav Keshev, and they're going to be listening to try to hear what was happening, where what was coming. Verse 8. Now Vayikra Aryeh ala mitzvah, and this is a strange verse because it talks about a lion calling. Now lions don't usually make noise, so who's the lion over here? Who is the lion that's going to call out? So Rashi says it refers to, there was a prophet who was called a lion. Habakkuk was the name of the prophet. And he was like a lion. He was fearless. The prophets had that, by the way, that they would go into kings and they would say, you know, other people were afraid to talk to the king that way. The prophets were like fearless like a lion. So he's saying that the prophets were going to predict this, or they were going to tell people about what had happened. That's one interpretation over here. There's another one, though. Let me see. He says that the lion was the watchman, this other commentary, because they chose a very strong person to be the... If you were in the watchtower, you were in the front line, so you needed somebody. And you also had to have a loud voice to warn the people, and so his nickname was Lion. That's just one of the commentaries said that the... that's who the lion is. So the lion on the watchtower called out, Hashem, Anochi Omi Tami Yomim. He says, I'm always been on the watch, Val Mishmarti, and on my guarding. Anochi Nitzat Kol Alilos. And he stands there every day. And verse 9, Hine Zeba. And guess what's coming? Rechav Ish Semed Prashim. The people are riding out of the desert. You know, again, usually the deserts are empty, and all of a sudden you see these chariots coming out of the middle of nowhere, and they're in the middle of the party. You know, they just were drinking, and they look out. What do you see? And the watchman says, "Oh my goodness, they're coming out of the desert." You know, they're coming, and the chariots are coming. He named Rathavish Shem Prashim, and the riders are coming, and Vayan, and they said, "Nafla, nafla, bubble." They said, "Babylonia is done. They've fallen." when something falls, it doesn't get fixed very easily. It falls like the Babylonian was proud and tall, and it says Nepho, they fell down, like this was it. They've fallen down. Babylonia has fallen down. Nepho, Nepho, Babel. The Kol Psile Eloha, and there's an interesting concept that we found this in Egypt, that when Hashem punishes a nation, he punishes their gods. Part of the wickedness of a nation is their religion, that they allows them to do the things that they did. And it's important that when they're punished, the people realize the falseness of their ideas and their religion. And their for example, the Egyptians worshipped the Nile. So one of the plagues was to turn the Nile into blood, to show them the bankruptcy of that idea. They worshipped the sheep, and the Korban Pesach was to take the lamb. And so when Hashem punishes a nation, he punishes their gods, so to speak. So here also, these gods of Babylonia would also break. Again, they were pagans. The Kol Psile Elohel, all their idols would be broken down. They would fall down. Medushne Uben Guri Asher Shemati. Basically, when things are threshed, they're like you separate the wheat from the chaff, and I think what you do is you beat it, and then that causes the two to separate. And I think he's describing what would happen in this military campaign. They'd be like the threshed grain. The word Medushasi Uben Guri Asher Shemati Mesa. This is what I heard is going to happen to Babylonia from the God of Israel, and it's a payback time for what they did to the Jewish people. Hagati, that's what I'm telling you. So this was the vision that he had about the future of Babylonia. Okay, and that's it. That's the end of this prophecy. Now we have another prophecy. Another. How do we know? Because it has this word again, Masa. Another Masa. Another harsh prophecy. The different words. And we get all caught up because when they put the two in the same chapter, we think that that's got to be like connected, or this, but not necessarily. It's just whenever they organized them, they just threw them all together, and they and then at one point somebody decided to make a chapter out. But they don't. It wasn't necessarily that way. It could be the prophecies were set at different times on different. Could be years apart, and it could be they're recorded together. But they may or may not be the same thought or the same. But this is another downfall of a nation. And this was, again, shortly after the destruction of the first temple, when Babylonia would be punished. And what had happened was that the Jewish people, when they were running away from Babylonia, had gone to some of their neighbors for help because the Babylonians were after them. And some of their neighbors we were related to. One was Edom from Esav, and the other one was the Arabs who were from Yishmael. So we expected that they would treat us kindly as refugees. And of course they didn't. And now they were going to, with the downfall of Babel, they would also become punished. Because they didn't, the poor Jewish people that were seeking refuge from Babel were not helped by these other countries. So, Masi Duma. So he says the prophecy of Duma. Duma is the country of Edom. There are ways to prove that, exactly what he referred to. But he says the following. Eli kor misir, and it happens from Seir. Seir is the, we have that in the Chumash, that Seir was the place of the Esav, was from Seir, Har Seir. I don't know where modern Hebrew it is. I don't know if they have it on the map, Seir, which kingdom it is today. If so are, I don't know what Seir is. Some mountainous area to the, say, in the north. But at any rate, those people, Shomer Mamelaila, the Shomer says, what will be of the night? Now, Babylonia was the country that had conquered Eretz Israel, and that was our first exile. And that was a short exile. The next exile would be at the hands of Esav, the Romans, who was considered the Esav, the Europeans, and we're still in that exile. We're still, in other words, there was a short amount of time where we got the land of Israel after being exiled for sure. We rebuilt the temple and we came back. And we haven't been back there. Now, the exciting thing is we're back now. So maybe hopefully soon we'll get to go to the third time. But we got a lot of things to work out first. A lot of problems, you know. But we're a lot closer than we were in other generations. In other words, we have millions of Jews living in Israel, and we have a rebuilding going on. And it wouldn't take much for you know things to happen or to work out. But this exile that we're in under the Esav, under the exile of the Christian world, so to speak, of the so it's compared to nighttime because. Nighttime is when things are confusing, when there's darkness, we don't see Hashem directly. When the temple was standing, all you had to do was go to the temple and you could witness miracles. There were open mirrors, like the smoke would come up from the Beis HaMikdash. It wouldn't get blown in different directions, it wouldn't rain on there, there'd be no flies. If you ever go to the Middle East and you ever see the Arab street where they have the meat hanging there, there's like flies all over the place. I mean, and the shuk, even the fruits, it's just, that's exactly what you feel. There's like flies, like people also, they have flies attached to them, and certain people, if you were to take like raw meat and leave it there, you would have tons of flies. But they said English, there were offerings everywhere, and there were no flies. They were like open miracles that you could just go. There were 10 every day, and you'd have the light that would stay burning always. You know that they would would leave it in overnight, and there'd be oil. It would be full. There were just many, many miracles that if a person wanted to be convinced, all they had to do was go to the. It was daytime. You could see. Today you have to have faith. You have to have a certain faith. It's like nighttime. You know it's there, but when the daylight comes, you'll see. So we also. There's certain darkness. There's certain things we don't know. But when the daylight comes, then we'll have clarity of vision. Then we'll see. And so he describes the shomer, the watchman. And he says, like, how long is this night? Mamalela, in other words, how long? Babylonian exile wouldn't last so long. But what about Esav? About the vision of the Mamalela, shomer, Mamalela, how long is this night going to be? Omer shomer. So the watchman said, Asuboker. Don't worry, there'll be a morning. The morning will come, the Gam Laila, and there'll be another night. Im tavo un bo, if you want, it'll come. Shuvu Esav, return, then it will come. So they explain that really, if we turn towards Hashem, then it'll become day again. Then the exile will end. If we really want. That's where they get into the idea. We want Mashiach now. Like, if you want, the only thing they forget to tell you is that it's not just to want. You can want. You know, I want to be a wealthy person. I want everything to be great. That's fine, but you're not doing anything to make that happen. On the other hand, if you want to turn to Hashem and you want to be a better person and you want to help other people, so then you have the ability to make it happen. In other words, if we as a group. Try to better ourselves and better our fellow man and help our fellow man, then we have the ability to bring a better situation. And so that's the vision of the watchman. If you want it to happen, you got to make it happen. You got to be willing to do some work. And so that's all hinted to over here in the message of the watchman. The simple meaning, though, is just that when will the night end? You know, when a person has a bad night, let's say they're tossing and turning or they have bad news, it seems to go on and on and on. You know, like you have a person who'll say a certain night where you can't sleep and you wake up and, no, it's not time to get up, and then you wake up another hour later and this night just goes on forever, or you don't feel well and you're waiting for the morning where you can, get up and you'll feel better. And how long is the night going to go on? And so that's kind of what they're asking the watchman. And basically he says, come back later the exile that we're in is not going to be like the watchmen in Babylonia where the posse's arrived, you know, they're coming out of the desert and bubble before you know it is going to disappear. But this vision of Esav, it will come, but not quickly. Okay. Now he gives another vision. This one is towards our Arab friends. Maisa, can't wait for that one to happen either, right? Masa, another vision. And this one is Ba'arav, Arabia. It's very interesting. Today they have the same name, Arabia. This is a vision for Arabia. I believe Arabia and Arab is the same word, I think. One is Arab, Arabia. I believe it's the Saudi Arabia is the land of the Arabs, or the... I think it's the same concept. But at any rate, this is a vision for the Arabs. When we were running away from the Babylonians, we thought our Arab brothers would help us a little bit. And this is described over here. The Yar Ba'ar Talina Orchot Adonim. And we call them Dod, like our uncle, Uncle Arabs, our Uncle Yishmael. So we thought that our family, it's only in our time that we have this, that the Arabs have really been our enemies in a strong way, that we know that they're our enemies. At that time, they really thought the Arabs would be kind to the Jews. What happened was, there's a famous story that the Jews came to the Arab lands. Could be that we were already prisoners, that they brought Jewish prisoners there, and the Jews were thirsty. You know, it's very hot in the Middle East, in the deserts, and so Likra Sama Hitivu Mayim. So the Jews were thirsty, and they wanted a drink, and they figured their Arab cousins would help them, and especially feel bad for them now that they were being taken into exile. Yoshve Eretz Tema Balachmo Kidmu Noder. The Medrash says that they gave them first, before they brought them water to drink, they brought them fish, dried fish, as in they didn't have refrigeration, and so the way they kept things was salted. They would salt them, and if you eat salted fish, if you ever try to eat like a, you know, like an anchovy or something salted, you have to have a drink afterwards because the salt makes you thirsty. And really what they had done was they decided they were going to kill the Jews. And all they had to convince them was to drink from poisonous thermoses. Now, a person would normally not take a drink of something unless they knew that it was okay to drink from it. But when you're very thirsty, you don't ask too many questions. Meaning that if you just had a salty fish and you've been in exile and you've been carried through the desert and your cousins... say, oh, we're so glad to see you, and they brought these thermoses, so the Jews took the drink from the thermos, and they drank the poison, and they died in the hundreds or thousands at that exchange. And this was like after everything, you know, after the siege and the famine and the exile, and they were brought to the Arabians, and we remember that we were related to them, and they were descendants from Yishmael. So not only didn't they help us, they brought the salty fish, and then they gave him the poison thermos treatment. And that's the mentioned in the Medrash. And it says that this is hinted to over here. But that's why they're going to get the punishment that they do. Verse 15. Ki mifnei. Because of the sword, they would face the presence of the sword. There's going to be a sword against it. All of these countries that when the sword came to the Jewish people, they eventually would come to them as well. 16. And within the year, just the amount of time normally a worker would work, people would have a year contract. So in like another year, the amount of time that these contract workers, they used to have contract workers from Qatar, called Covid Qatar, this country, these Arab countries would be destroyed. This country, the Arabs at that particular place were famous from Qatar. They were good shots. They were good at the bow and arrow. And they relied on it that they were good shots with the arrows, that they thought they were invincible. And but Hashem has spoken, and so the arrows are not going to do them any good. So just to kind of just review, so we have in this chapter three masas, three heavy burdens, three visions about what would happen to Bavel, which was the country that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and we had a hint to that famous meal where they had the handwriting on the wall, and how the Medes and the Persians would come out of the desert and destroy Bavel. We had a little bit of discussion about the watchman, the position of a watchman who can see from afar. And we talked about the other exile of the Jewish people, which was underneath the dominion of Seir, which is really Esav. And they describe it being a long night. And when is this night going to come to an end? And the idea that we can bring the Mashiach if we want it, if we really want it, if we want to really fix things, if we want to help each other, then we can bring an end to that. But that eventually these nations would be punished. And then we had the vision about the Arabians. So I believe, by the way, the Cater people also were part of the Arabs. They were, in other words, we mentioned that we started this on verse 13 with Arabia, and then all of a sudden it starts talking about Cater. So I think Cater was a place in Arabia. There was they were the archers of the Arabians. And then it mentioned this second medrash about when we were exiled and our cousins, the Yishma'elim, were so nice to bring us the salty fish, and then they gave us these thermoses which had the poison air. The Middle East has always had ways of poisoning people, the ways of, it actually goes way back where they would poison, you know, leaders, and they had different snake poisons and venoms, and, you know, assassinations are really nothing new. We just use different methods. But so they had the poison flask or whatever was in it, and they would be punished, and the war within a short amount of time, like the time that a worker's contract would last, they would be punished. Okay, we'll stop here at chapter 22. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.